in an unhealthy relationship? Would you even know if you are in an unhealthy relationship? Or perhaps you are a parent who has a teen or a young adult that you feel or fear that your teen or young adult is in a very abusive and unhealthy relationship. If you answered yes, or you resonate with any of the questions that I just asked, then you are in for a treat, because my guest, Ashley, and I are going to have a conversation on what are some of these warning signs that parents can look for if their teen or young adult is in an abusive or unhealthy relationship. Ashley is an expert in the field of helping others with sexual abuse, domestic violence, and just plain old unhealthy relationships, whether that be in a love relationship or even a friendship. So if you are wanting to know more and understand more about the warning signs of what an unhealthy relationship looks like, and even how to avoid getting into one, then I encourage you to tune in to this week's episode. Welcome to the Masks Off for People Pleasers and Perfectionists podcast. I am Kim Gross, your host, and it is my mission to help you unmask from people pleasing and perfectionistic behaviors so that you can finally have the confidence to live the life that you truly desire. Let's tune in to this week's episode. I'm going to begin with a quote as I normally do, and the quote is, "You don't ever have to do anything sensational for people to love you." And that is by Fred Rogers. And you know what? That's such a key quote, because that really does underpin what the perfectionist and people pleaser needs to embody, because the people pleaser and perfectionist often feels like they have to perform, perfect, or please in order to be loved. And so this is saying you don't have to do anything sensational for people to love you. It's important to just be you. So I love that quote that you shared. Thank you so much. And why don't we start by having you introduce yourself, tell us who you are, and you have such an interesting and impactful story, if you want to share that with us.
Sure. Thank you, Kim, for having me. So I am Ashley Bendixson. I live in Newport, Rhode Island, and I guess most of my work, I'll start there. I grew up in Massachusetts, so I'm a New Englander at heart. Love where I live in Rhode Island, but most of my work is actually traveling. I speak full-time, specializing in speaking to students and the adults who serve them, as well as doing some other professional trainings as well. And a lot of this, as we'll probably discuss, comes from my own experiences as a young person and my experience as a young adult, really trying to find myself and learning those life lessons that I wish I knew young. So year-round, I'm traveling across the country, going into communities, giving speeches, hosting conversations, and particularly my expertise is in dating violence prevention, healthy relationships, as well as mental health and resilience, and how all of those issues overlap. So that's what I do. I love my job. I'm so passionate about it.
That's awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And I think the reason why I said that we might be taking a different angle in this conversation is because my guess is, and you can share from your expertise on this, my guess is that most people that are in an abusive relationship or toxic or unhealthy relationship, most people barely know that they are. Like, they might feel shitty on the inside, but not really sure why they're feeling so shitty. And maybe in particular, the one that is being abused is in some way, shape, or form feeling like he or she is causing the other in the relationship to be the way they're being, like, oh, it's my fault that he's being such an ass. And I did this and I did that. So I think I want to start there. If you want to share your thoughts on what I just said, is it true that most people, let alone teens and young adults who are so young still, are really unaware?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's probably important for me to add. When I'm not speaking in schools, I'm speaking to people of all ages. I am training first responders, healthcare workers. Sometimes I'm doing a talk for parents, and they are then realizing they're in an abusive relationship. So you are absolutely right. As someone who has a language for what abuse is, I see abusive relationships everywhere. And more commonly, we refer to these as toxic relationships, or we have our issues, or many times we will look at our partner's behaviors and assign a justification to it because they have some anger issues. And when they were a kid, they went through this, so they struggle with A, B, and C, and I'm being patient. A lot of the stuff that we dismiss as just either toxic or unhealthy actually do border into that area of being an abusive relationship. And I think for me, that was my experience. I spent so many years of my young adult life in these repeat abusive relationships. And I always just thought, no one can understand. It's too complex. It's unique to us. And I knew it was wrong, but I just didn't know how to explain any of it. I just hoped that if I kept trying or being patient, that eventually things would get better. And then one day, I actually had a guest speaker come into one of my college classrooms, and my life was on a PowerPoint slide. They were talking about domestic violence, and it was like bullet points of exactly what I'd gone through. Things like your partner doesn't let you have your own friends. They get upset when you make plans that don't involve them. They're bothered when you choose to sign up for extracurriculars or stay late at work. Like all of these things that felt like that's just my boyfriend's issues. Wait, this is textbook and it's studied. And since then, I try to relay that same information. And with every talk, people come and disclose, often for the first time, no matter their age, that, oh, I guess that relationship I was in actually was abuse. But many of us think that abuse is physical. We picture the violent harm, but often it's the emotional, the psychological, the cycle of just like good days and bad days and good days and horrible days that we just don't recognize as abusive. But that's exactly what it is.
Okay, so I want to start with a hypothetical. Let's say that we're talking about a young adult, let's say a female in her 20s, early 20s, and she's just starting to date someone new. What could she be looking for, or what types of things would she maybe see right from the jump in the beginning that would be a sign of, you better head the other way, honey, because if you stay, this is just going to head down the road of misery for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really challenging because most people do not express any abusive behaviors in the beginning. Otherwise, people would probably leave after date number two. But I would say that typically one of the first phases of an abusive relationship is what's called love bombing. And this can be challenging because love bombing can be a red flag or it can be totally normal and healthy. So essentially, this is when you first meet someone and it feels too good to be true. There's this like intensity of affection and connection. Maybe they're saying things very early on, like, I've never met anyone like you before. I've never felt so comfortable around someone. And maybe your first dates tend to be a little bit over the top, and there's gifts and trips and vacations. And when you're young, maybe that means that they're even taking a selfie with you and already posting it on their social media. And it almost has this excitement to it where you think, maybe I've just met my soulmate, right? Like it's all just amazing. And that can be true. The relationship continue and it can be healthy. But I think when all that's going on, just being alert that this might just be this little phase where someone builds up those strong feelings in you. The thing about love bombing is you build up feelings of trust and love and affection very quickly. And it paints a picture of how amazing this person can be. So suddenly when they change a few months later, you think, this isn't who they are. This isn't who I met. It must be a one-time thing, or maybe I did something wrong. So I think just being very alert in the beginning that over-the-top affection could actually be a sign that something's off or it's not taking a healthy path. And then I think, honestly,
can we stop there for a second? Because I just want to break that one down. That one is blowing my mind. Right. Oh my gosh. Because just like you said, you would not expect that to be a problem. And you said sometimes there is some healthy love bombing, but you would not expect that. Okay. Hypothetically speaking, with this 20-year-old person, she is being love bombed, just like you said. I want to first understand, why is the person who's doing the love bombing aware of what he's doing? Does he know that he's love bombing in a way of, in an attempt to gain, chase, acquire? Is that a whole like cat and mouse kind of chase thing? Or I'll win you over and then sweep you to the side? Like, what is going on there?
Yeah, I really wish there was a wider body of research into the psychology of abusive people. And unfortunately, there isn't that much. Whether it's intentional or not, I really can't say one way or another. I do think, though, that people who are abusive are exceptional at being charming. That's also inherent in like narcissism. You think really highly of yourself. And so in the beginning, you can put on that act, put on that face, be loving, be affectionate, win someone over. And then once you get comfortable with that person, you start to test. And that's why abusive behaviors start really subtle and almost unrecognizable. So yeah, whether they know they're doing it or not, I'm not sure. They probably just see it as a pattern of everything was great in the beginning, and then you started to make me mad. So yeah, it's hard to know whether they know they're doing it.
Okay, so fair enough. All right, so that was phase one. And then you were going to go on to what phase two is.
Yeah, and then I think what tends to follow are those really subtle, but like steadily increasing behaviors that feel a little bit off. Typically, one of the first things that happens is isolation. So it's not necessarily your partner saying you're not allowed to hang out with your friends, but they'll express some discomfort, some concern. They might guilt trip you into saying that they just wanted to spend some solo time with you. But little by little, day by day, you start to feel like you can't see your friends without your partner getting upset. Or maybe they want to turn it into a group date, a group hang. And when you're young, often you look at that and think they're clingy, they're just a little bit needy, or they just like me so much, they want to spend all their time with me. But when you start to feel like you can't see people in your life or do the things that are like unique to you without your partner, that's a definite red flag. But many people overlook that in the beginning. And that's really where it starts. Once your partner kind of expresses their opinions over how you spend your time and who you spend it with, that kind of expands into them inserting their opinions into all aspects of your life. The choices you make, the things you say, how you talk to them, how you behave as a partner, it just starts to spiral out of control until all of a sudden you're in it.
I love this. This is such a good conversation. So to weave what you just said into the people pleaser, it makes perfect sense why that type of partner would most likely attract a people pleaser, because the people pleaser just will put the other person's wants, needs, and desires in front of her own. And so if the partner is expressing disapproval in the way that he or she, the other, is spending their time, of course, the people pleaser person is going to say, okay, fine, I won't go out with my friends. I won't go do this. I won't go do that. Because subconsciously or consciously, she's hearing, I can't do those things because he doesn't want me to be doing them. Or if, right. Depending if it, who's the one doing the disapproval, it could be the other way around. It could be a she with a guy. I just want to make that clear for the audience.
Yeah. Or same sex relationships.
Or same sex. Exactly. This isn't like a male does this to a female kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think we're given those messages that love is about a level of sacrifice, or that love means through good or bad, thick or thin. And sometimes sacrifice your own values. You put yourself second because you think, I need to be here for my partner. Sometimes we think victims must be weak, but I saw myself as a very strong woman. I understood he had some trauma in his life. He had a rough life. And therefore I was trying to be empathetic and be there for him and be the woman that could help him. So yeah, the people pleasing and even almost the high achievers and those who tend to handle lots of things can fall victim to a partnership like this.
Oh my goodness. 100%. Okay. So that was phase two. Are there more phases? Are there other things to look out for?
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really typical to abuse is that there tends to be a cycle at a certain point where, you know, for a little while, you might be back in that honeymoon phase. It feels like the person you met is back and things are back to the way they were. But then usually following that happy period, there's this moment of tension where you almost know, you come home from work and you can tell something's off, your partner's not in a good mood. And then there's some big outburst argument. It could be a door slam. It could be an accusation of cheating. It could be the cold shoulder, the silent treatment. You have no idea why. And typically there's an apology after that. They swear they won't do it again. Maybe it's your love bombed all over again. And then you're back in that honeymoon phase. But this cycle starts to repeat so often. It might happen a few times in a day, but this is pretty typical of an abusive relationship, is that kind of repetitive pattern and cycle that keeps happening.
Okay, so let's pause there. Oh, I love this. Let's break this down. So if you're in a relationship and it's fairly new and it doesn't matter whether it's a new relationship or you've been together for a while or for years. What you're saying is if there is this repetitive cycle of this love bombing, this charming, oh, I love you, everything is all wonderful and rainbows and sunshine. And then that, on a drop of a dime, the person flips a switch, becomes angry, almost like an irrational type of anger. Doesn't really maybe match up with even anything that the other person actually did or said. It's improportionate. And they go into this angry, abusive withdrawal shutdown phase, followed by another phase of, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. Does this just pertain to romantic relationships, or would you say this can be like friendships and even parent-child relationships?
Absolutely. I think we see this most common in intimate partner relationships, but it's also incredibly prevalent in all of our relationships. Often I get this from my presentations. Students will often ask, can your best friend treat you like this? Or I think my mom does some of these things. So it absolutely extends to all of our relationships, which is really why, and I'm sure we'll get there, it comes back to us knowing our values and setting boundaries, because before we know it, our whole life can be centered on trying to make everyone happy. The whole people-pleasing conversation, at a certain point in relationships like this, you filter every decision you make through whether they will be happy or not, lose their cool or not. It got to a point where before I chose anything, even whether I go eat lunch on the way home, I'd have to consider whether my partner would get mad at me. And there's people in our life that are like this. They're unpredictable, like you said, volatile. There's this disproportionality between them getting upset at you over literally nothing. So you begin to just operate on this level of putting everybody's needs first, putting this person's needs first, and therefore sacrificing your own, even if that's something as simple as, like I said, stopping for a coffee because you might get yelled at.
Oh my goodness. Okay. So in that situation that you just described, clearly if the person is a people pleaser, and that's playing out, then that person, that partner has to do the work that I've done in my life and that I continue to do with others, which is to do enough healing work, enough inner work to know that I am freaking worthy and I'm worthy and I matter enough to make my own choices, make my own decisions. I'm a grown-ass adult, even a young adult or a teenager, let's say young adult at least for sure, does not have to have every decision pass the test, the approval test of that other person. And in order to get to that place, you have to have enough self-worth. You have to be able to be so self-assured and centered in who you are as a person to be able to say, set that boundary. Look, no. If it was the example of you stopped at Starbucks and you didn't call your partner and say, hey, I'm at Starbucks. Would you like some? Okay. Too freaking bad. That is not something that you are required to do to be in a healthy relationship. Now, if you're just like, oh, you're thinking of your partner and you're going through the Starbucks drive-thru, you're like, oh, gee, let me call and see if my partner would like one as a thoughtful gesture. That's totally different from, oh, I better call and see if he wants something. Because if I go home with a Starbucks cup in my hand and he sees it and says, why the fuck did you not ask me if I wanted one? And then gets volatile from there. That's how some of these abusive outbursts happen, right? Something as simple as that.
And in those moments, an abusive partner feeds all of these messages like, if you cared about me, you would have thought about me, and you're being selfish, or they might use money. It's so manipulative in those moments. But you're right, it's so nuanced because all of these scenarios can be either healthy or abusive. A big thing these days is a lot of partners choose to share their locations for safety. Maybe I travel a lot and I want my partner to know where I am. In some relationships, one partner is demanding it. I want to know where you are so I can make sure you're not up to no good. And I think that's like kind of the telltale sign, is when it's one person who's always initiating these issues, always having the demands and the expectations, that's where this imbalance occurs. And it's a major red flag.
It's almost like what you're describing as the imbalance is that the partners are staying in this parent-child dynamic. Mm-hmm. The one who is being abusive is this controlling, domineering parent-like figure, when they may be with someone who's the same freaking age and treating that partner as a little child.
Right. And that is at the core of every action that an abusive partner makes. They want to establish power and control, and they can do that with their words. They can do that with their fists. They can do that by telling you not to take a job opportunity, telling you that you don't have to worry about the money because they're going to make it all, questioning your ability to make a choice about something. They start to make you self-doubt and get second guess yourself. Everything is so manipulative and strategically designed to make you less than them so that you don't leave, right? If you're dependent or you don't feel like you can get any better, or now you don't even work, how could you possibly leave the relationship? So it is power and control all day. And until you have the language, until you learn, you don't see that this is what's going on. It's just too personal and close to home. And then that's why a lot of people years later look back and they're like, oh my gosh, I didn't realize how much of a web was just pulling my life apart.
Wow. Okay. So we talked before in our last conversation about how parents, if there are parents who are listening to this episode and they have teenagers or young adults, and they suspect that their child might be in an abusive relationship or a toxic or unhealthy relationship, however you want to label it. But basically, the relationship exhibits a lot of the signs that you have been talking about throughout this episode. How would you, or what would you say to the parent who is listening on how they might be able to help have a conversation? First of all, should they even have a conversation with their teen or young adult about this? And if so, how would they even approach it?
Yes, I would say I have a few pieces of advice. So whether it's you're concerned your child might be in an abusive relationship or having any issues in life, right? Teenagehood is a time where you start to see changes in your child, mood swings. I would say the default should always be to check in with concern and compassion, because sometimes the things that we think are typical teenage behaviors could be a byproduct of something more serious going on in their life. My parents saw the warning signs as really me just being a difficult teenager. Mm. So I think pay attention to those changes in your child first and foremost. I think as a more practical piece of advice of how to initiate that conversation. So one mistake that we all make as friends, loved ones, bystanders, is we tend to point a finger at the abusive partner. We'll say, I don't like how he does that. I don't like how they do this, how they shouldn't be. And if you are dating that person, your inclination is to defend them. Mm. You're going to say, you don't understand, you don't see it. You're never going to have a helpful conversation if that's the approach. So what I would say to parents is twofold. First, check in and validate why you're checking in. So give a specific example. Hey, I noticed that you're not really hanging out with your girlfriends every Friday night like you used to. Is everything okay? Do you feel like your relationship is just a little bit clingy? Is everything all right? So give a specific, like, tangible thing that you've noticed, because that's probably something they've noticed too, but no one's actually had a conversation with them about it yet. And then the second piece is really just to shift the focus on them as much as you can. Leave the partner out of it, but ask questions. How are you feeling? How's things going? Do you feel like you can still have a life outside of your relationship? Just normalizing these conversations around what's healthy and what isn't. It can be really challenging because even if you're right, and even if your kid opens up, they might not just go break up with that person the next day. It is a slow and patient process. But I think just being present, having those little ongoing conversations, validating when you're concerned, and mentioning, like, hey, it's okay if you don't want to talk to me, but can I help you talk to someone else about this relationship? That's the biggest step. I think it's one of those subjects where, like, parents don't need to be the expert. They just need to be the conduit that recognizes their kid needs help and being that consistent voice that this isn't okay and I'm concerned about you. It's the kids whose parents don't notice, don't try, fight against them where the help doesn't show up. So yeah, it's challenging, but I think just be honest and check in.
Do you recommend that the parent avoid using the words, I think you're in a toxic relationship, I think you're in an abusive relationship? Should they avoid those actual words or call a spade?
I think I would avoid it in the beginning, just because, one, you don't want to be wrong either and make an assumption that isn't true. But I think that when you have enough evidence, and when you can say, these are the three things that make me think this could be abusive, when you can, like I said, gather clues, have tangible things that you can share with them and say, this sounds like an abusive relationship. Have you Googled it? Right? Kids go online and search things. Have you searched dating abuse online? And just to make sure that your relationship is healthy. If I'm wrong, great. But I think it's important to use this language, because that's why people don't recognize it. And unfortunately, many people who are young in abusive relationships are in abusive relationships as adults, because no one ever told them domestic violence can happen to a 14-year-old girl. So I think it's important. I think we should use language whenever we can. And like I said, back it up so that teens can really understand what's healthy and what isn't.
And for that matter, if a parent is listening to this episode, they can use this episode as a springboard. Hey, I just listened to this episode on this Masks Off podcast, and this Ashley chick was talking about blah, blah, blah. And she talks to teens and young adults all around the country, and you might find this interesting or whatever. So that's also an option as well.
Yeah. And honestly, I think for parents, just to keep it really simple and at those early like things that we can talk about that are abusive, the stuff that teens relate to are like not being allowed to see your friends, or often just talking about this in a third person perspective, like what are your friends' relationships like? What are the relationships like at school? I think everybody's witnessed a friend who suddenly stops hanging out because they're in a relationship. So that's one. And then the other big thing is the role of technology. Maybe it's someone's dating and their partner requires that they share their location, which we mentioned. Mm-hmm. But it's also a partner who wants your social media passwords. They want your phone passwords. They might criticize and meticulously observe what you're liking online or choosing what types of posts you can put on your own Instagram account, what types of outfits you wear. They are so controlling with social media. So these are those little starter conversations that kids relate to. Every time I speak, I'll talk about the location monitoring, the social media passwords, and kids like look at each other because this is so common. So those are some like teen friendly ways to talk about this bigger concept of abuse. It's really just how a partner can be controlling. And I think anytime a parent can think of like, how is this relevant to a teenager's life? Those conversations will be much more real and relatable to them.
And just to reiterate again, that this can also happen between friends.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't just have to be, we have been talking about romantic relationships throughout most of the podcast, but again, just to emphasize that your teen might be in a friendship that, and that friend is exemplifying the same or similar behaviors, correct?
Yeah. One of the biggest things that I teach, and it's probably even more important than everything else, is really just recognizing what I call internal red flags. And it's really just going back to our intuition and knowing when someone or something is right for us or isn't. And internal red flags are recognizing that since spending time with someone, you feel badly about yourself. You have changed for the worse, right? You've changed in a negative way. You feel silenced, you feel controlled, like you're walking on eggshells to not upset them. You feel like you have to keep a secret in some way. Those little internal like warning signs are probably the most important ones that we can pay attention to. So I think it really just goes back to that age old lesson of if something doesn't feel right, talk to someone. If something doesn't feel right, it probably isn't. If a person in your life makes you feel not great about yourself, they're probably not good for you. So I think we just need to keep reiterating that.
I love that. So then finally, we talked a lot about what an unhealthy relationship looks like. And one might just assume, okay, just go and do the opposite for what a healthy relationship should look like. What does a healthy relationship look like?
Yeah, I think these are like values we can rattle off, but they're often not true in practice when it comes to relationships. But really, I think having a sense of independent identities. One of the first things a victim usually loses is their own sense of self and identity and the things that make them. So in a healthy relationship, you both have your own quirks, interests, friends, hobbies, and things. And there's these beautiful areas where your life overlaps and you share things together, but you still have your own stuff too. So having that independent sense of self is really important. I think communication is key. And when we say that, we mean respectful communication. So sometimes our partners are going to make mistakes or someone's going to have an expectation that it doesn't get met. And this is part of learning and growing, especially when you're young and learning relationships. So having respectful conversations where one person doesn't have to be right and the other one's wrong, or one person's smarter and the other one's stupid, that's really important. And I think accountability is huge. Partners are always going to make mistakes. And abusive partners apologize every time, but there's no actual action to show that apology is real. So I think mistakes are going to happen, arguments are going to happen, but when someone apologizes and pledges to do better, they will actually do it. And unfortunately, people who are abused, they hear these open-ended apologies all the time and nothing ever changes. So I would say accountability is huge. And then all the other things. Trust is at the center of a healthy relationship. Most abusive partners have zero trust. You come home 10 minutes late and they think you're cheating. Trust is at the heart of it. But yeah, I think this is unique to each of us, is knowing what we need in a partner. And sometimes that means grabbing a pen and pencil or pencil and grabbing a piece of paper and writing what your values are and making sure everyone in your life passes that test. I don't think many of us have ever actually thought about what our values are in a relationship. And it's really powerful when you think about it and write it down. And you will find that you will attract these people into your life so much more effortlessly than if you really just don't know.
And I would add one other thing, since this is masks off, is that believing and knowing that you can be your true self with the other person. If you are hiding your true self behind a mask, then that is not a healthy relationship. That is not a person for you. It's not a friendship for you. If you're afraid to be who you truly are, or ashamed to be who you truly are, that's not a healthy relationship at all.
Right.
You have to be able to take your mask off. You have to be able to be yourself and know that it's safe enough. And what you have talked about throughout this entire episode, the way you describe that abusive person, that is not a person that you want to be, that you would feel safe with. And Brené Brown talks all the time about loving with a safe heart, loving, knowing when to be vulnerable. The people have to earn the right for you to be able to be vulnerable with them. And so therefore, someone who is abusive in the way that you described or toxic is not someone who's earning your trust to be vulnerable with them.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think just to add to what you're saying about being yourself in a healthy relationship, you can be yourself. That also includes like expressing your own needs and disappointments and desires. I think sometimes you think, well, it's not that important, I'll just keep it to myself. But when you can get to a place where you can be a bit needy at times, be wrong at times, be messy at times, that's when it's healthy. When a partner still loves you through those moments and you work through things together. And when you're used to people pleasing, the idea of complaining about something, you'd rather just run or lock it up, because will anyone like me if I'm a complainer, right? So you have to learn to like let that side of you out as well.
Love it. This episode has so many jewels in it. There's so much value. Thank you so much for sharing your wisdom, your expertise, your story. How can people find you?
Yeah, I'm on all the socials. I'm at ashleybendixson.com. And you can find me on, I usually spend most of my time on Instagram and LinkedIn. That's where I post the most frequently. But if anyone wants to reach out, you can send me a message. My email is on my website. And I have resources on my website as well. So if anyone is feeling like they need some professional support, there's incredible national hotlines. There's even text lines if you prefer to start the conversation by texting a specialist. All of that's on my website, but of course you can just Google that and find it quickly as well. It's important that people are getting help. And that also goes for people who think they might be abusive at times, because I think we all have little behaviors we could probably improve upon. There's help for everyone to be more healthy, loving, respectful partners.
Thank you so much for being a guest today on Masks Off. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you, Kim.
Well, there you have it. Another episode of Masks Off for people pleasers and perfectionists. I do hope that you found value in this episode. I hope that you feel inspired. It is my hope, my wish, my desire that you can find the freedom to live the life that you've always wanted, to create the life that you desire. And probably most importantly, it's my wish and my hope for you that when you are on your deathbed, that you do not look back on your life and say, boy, I wish I had showed up as my true self. I wish I had taken off the masks and allowed myself to be fully seen. That is my hope and my wish for you through these episodes. And if you enjoyed this episode, I would love for a comment, or if you want to review it,